The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, January 22nd, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Oh, it's a wonderful day here in Sonoma County, and we are live this morning. We got up and came into the studio, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful day. And I'm doing something special today. Rather than have a guest, I'm going to be the guest. With so much going on in this world, I thought I would do a commentary for this show. The theme of the show today is Children Live What They Learn. I'm going to play some special music, and we'll be sharing some thoughts on what is going on in today's world from my perspective. And for the show today, I'm going to be commenting on two very important aspects of our lives here in the world. The first thing is in 1960, there was a, it was called Children Live What They Learn. It was actually a poem or a poster that was made in 1954. And it really worked on helping children to understand jealousy, the importance of praise, the importance of honesty, the importance of fairness. And, you know, what inspired all this for me, which is really, really interesting, is I read in our local paper that gang problems were on the rise. Not only were gang problems on the rise, but we've had a real important program here in Sonoma County. I remember a city council member, Ernesto Alvarez, really put his heart and soul into it. And at the time that he was a city council member, at the time that this program was operating, the gang problem was a lot less. It didn't seem that it was in the newspaper every single day. I mean, it's interesting what's happening at Montgomery High School and hearing about four young women jumped one woman and was crashing her head in. And I kept thinking to myself, what is going on with our youth? And I started thinking about it. I started thinking, you know, we've kind of lost that idea of children live what they learn. You know, when you look around and you look at the movies, you look at some of the television shows, I mean, the violence is horrific. Then, you know, if there's an issue, we have a problem, we go to war. I mean, what are we showing our children? I mean, it's really, really important that we look at that. And so I thought I would go through the whole thing of children live what they learn and kind of talk about it. And my hope is that there's people out there listening and they remember exactly what our children need. And I support the idea, of course, you have to have some law enforcement or some sort of monitoring on campuses. But I think the most important thing that you need to have is you need to have counselors. You need to have jobs for these young people. You need to have things that inspire them rather than deplete them. You know, in my own background, I mean, I was very lucky. I went back to school when I was 30 years old and was able to study and be able to understand and raise a daughter and start understanding what young people go through, what I went through when I was growing up. You know, I was a kind of an acting out teenager. I got into a lot of trouble. It wasn't until I met a wonderful counselor, Mrs. Lane was her name, and she told me, she says, you know, Elaine, you're going to be emancipated at 18 years old. You know, you'll be on your own. You only have a few years to go. Why don't you take business courses and we'll get you a job? They got me a job at the telephone company. I mean, my God, I was able to buy my own clothes. I was able to have my own money. I had a sense of pride about myself, and I graduated high school. And not only did I graduate high school, but I had enough money to go on to New York and live there for several years. at the advice of this wonderful, wonderful principal, excuse me, counselor, who was not judging me, who sat me down and said, hey, look, you know, these are your options. And you're also, she really told me, she says, you know, when I look at your grades and I look at what you're doing, you have some level of intelligence, Elaine. You got to apply it. And I followed her. I followed her guide. And also what happened, it took me 10 years till I finally went back to school to finally get my degrees that I needed to have to be able to get a good job. And then I ended up working with two organizations that really showed me some of the issues around young people. The first organization was Neighborhood Youth Corps. It was an amazing program. They had I was a counselor there. I devoted my time to the young people that I work with, and I was also able to get them jobs. And all of them graduated. I was so shocked. I mean, my whole class graduated. I worked with them for 2 years. And it was an amazing, amazing process. And I really went with the idea of children learn what they live and try to apply those principles with those young people that I was working with. And it was an amazing experience. You know, I want to give you a little bit of background about this famous poster. It was written actually by an educator by the name of Dorothy Law Nolte, and she was a woman who understood the field of positive youth development before it was even invented. In fact, she was the one that came forward and says, in order for us to have success with our children in school, you've got to help them. These are the principles that they have to learn. And so in the second half, after we go through some of our histories, our strength, and some of the other things we go to, we will talk about that particular poster. And that's on another segment of the show is I'm going to talk about Kwanzaa. You know, it's a holiday. It's an African-American holiday that was brought to the United States and that is celebrated. It starts the first day after Christmas is when it starts, and then it ends on New Year's. And why I decided to look at the principles of Kwanzaa, because I think it's very important that we look at some of the principles that they offer. They offer seven principles, and I think it's very, very interesting if we could apply that. And they celebrate for 7 days, and it's kind of interesting. It kind of is at the same time that Hanukkah happens, and Hanukkah has 8 candles. Kwanzaa has 7 candles for their 7 principles that we're going to discuss. And it's really interesting. The number 7 is big with them. They have it. The holiday is 7 days. It has 7 principles, and it has 7 candles. And so it's a very, very powerful holiday. I was introduced to it about 2 years ago when I became involved with the North Bay Black Chamber of Commerce, and I met a woman by the name of Sabria Abdul. If you recall, folks, we were not here on January 1st, and I actually ran the program where she gave an in-depth discussion about what Kwanzaa was all about. And I will put the link, too, on our website. I'll put the link so you can see exactly where you can listen to her interview also if you want to find out just a little bit more about Kwanzaa. Well, you know, every once in a while, what I do before the show, while I'm doing the script, you know, I do a script. I have a script in front of me. Most people that I interview when they come in, they're always so shocked when I have all this paper in front of me that I follow. But what I do every once in a while is I check, you know, what day are we celebrating? You know, here, this is January 22nd. What's important about this day? Well, I got to tell you something. I couldn't believe it. But today is actually the anniversary of the court case that gave women agency over their own bodies. The U.S. Supreme Court made a ruling that legalized abortion throughout the country with variations from state to state depending on the length of the pregnancy. Wow. What a big deal that was, you know. And no matter what your opinion on this controversial abortion debate is, Roe versus Wade marked a pivotal turn in U.S. history. The anniversary of the landmark court decision is celebrated by people everywhere, especially by women. I remember, let me tell you something. I marched for abortion. why did I march for abortion? Well, I had an aunt who had to have an abortion because she had three children and her husband was having a nervous breakdown. And on, I could tell you about the story. And we had to go get a backdoor abortion for her. And while she was going through labor in her bedroom with me and my mother, all of a sudden blood burst all over the place. And we called the emergency room and they said, it sounds like an abortion. If she comes down here, we're going to have to save the baby. And they're giving us all this rigmarole and my aunt screaming. And I'm just going, what is going on here? And finally she did, the abortion happened. And we got her to the emergency room, and she had to have three blood transfusions. And we were very lucky that she did not die. Well, that was an eye-opener for me when all of a sudden women start talking about the right to have freedom over their own body and make that decision. I was out there marching because of what happened to my aunt. I knew from personal experience. Well, unfortunately, you know, and I heard someone who's running for president say that what one of his biggest successes was is that they broke the abortion law, that they got rid of Roe versus Wade. Unfortunately, on Friday, June 24, 2022, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, the landmark legislation that made access to an abortion and a federal right in the United States of America. The decision dismantled 50 years of legal protection and paved the way for individual states to curtail or outright ban that right. And we see it. I mean, we see it all over the place. It's so interesting. It's mind-boggling to me when I think about it. You know, I got the National Organization for Women, the National, which is in Washington, D.C., sent out a notice that we have to be careful because they want to cut the WIC program. Well, the WIC program was really set up to help women after they had their children, to make sure they had the right food, the right formulas, and all that good stuff. And here they're saying that they're so involved with the fetus. What about what happens when that fetus comes out and becomes a child and needs food, education, you know, child care if the mother has to go to work? You know, it seems like those things are not important, but the fetus is important. So I wish I had been trying to have some of these pro-life people, they call themselves, to have a discussion with me. You know, not an angry discussion, but just woman to woman. Tell me, let me know exactly what your thoughts are and what your feelings are. You know, I really believe, you know, if you're going to outlaw abortion and you're going to be so concerned about the fetus, what about the child when it comes out? I think that's very important also. So there's a lot to think about in that area. That's why it's really important when women go to the polls, they make sure they vote for someone who's going to protect their rights. And there's all kinds of different ways that right can be protected that I know is being discussed all through the nation. And what's so interesting also about today, which is January 22nd, 2024, it's called the Celebration of Life Day, which lands on January 22nd. It was originally instituted to celebrate all the children in our lives. It has come to to mean that it's good to be alive. It's easy to forget sometimes that we are all fortunate to be here. You know, and sometimes we have to take time to celebrate life. Hey, I'm here. How did I get here? I live in this mystery. It's great. You know, it's all starts with gratitude and appreciation for where you are right now and wherever you hope your dreams is to take you. Every life is precious, individual, and a huge gift. So take a little extra time today to celebrate that. Well, you know, I heard, according to our Bible, is that life really begins after the first breath, and that's after the child is born. That's when you have to start recognizing it's very important. I mean, it's from fetus to death that we have to take care of each other. You can't just say, oh, before it's born, I'm going to fight for it. I'm going to make sure it has a choice and all that other stuff. And then after it's born, you know, hey, it's okay to be homeless. You know, it's okay not to have education. you know, back to what I was thinking about with all the stuff that's happening with the gangs and stuff, that's very important that we have programs for these children. You know, if you just think back, if you just think back when you were a teenager, some of the struggles that you went through, you realize it's not just a simple thing. Oh, get up in the morning, everything's fine. No, you got to go through. You got to learn how to read. You got to learn how to write. You have to learn how to. I recognize that when I was going to school, the one thing they never covered at all was nutrition. Right to life is very important. Pro-life is very important. But how do you support that life once it's here? That's also a part of education. So there's a lot to think about. And I hope folks, when they listen to the show, that we do think about these things and we do stand up. We stand up for our rights and we stand up for our right to choose. In fact, I want to make a little announcement. My next show, I'm going to have the past President Jan Blalock of the Commission on the Status of Women. And she's going to give us a report of what's important about the commission and how they're moving forward and who their new officers were. Well, as we do every Monday morning, we do the segment that we call Our History is Our Strength. And for today's program, there's just three women that have really had an impact, really had an impact. And the first one is Mahuta Gumbadis, and she was the author. She was an author. She immigrated to Boston from Lithuania, and she was very deep into folklore, rituals, and ancient history. She wrote actually the prehistory of modern Europe in 1956, and what she's famous for. And when I found out about her, she wrote The Civilization of the Goddess in 1994, you know, which is a really comprehensive novel, historic book. I mean, when I saw the book, it was just amazing, though, with all the different areas that women went through and all the different rituals around women. And very, very important. And I think during the women's movement, that's when it really started to surface, where we start studying that. You know, she wrote it in 1994, but you had inklings of it as we were at Sonoma State studying about women and women's history. It was very, very interesting. And also the book, you know, how many folks, if you remember, you see that little fat woman, you know, with the big breast, that's the first level of goddess. And then it moves up towards the chain. And then we get to the point where all of a sudden women are delegated to, I mean, who knows what they're delegated to. All of a sudden they became the property of men instead of being looked at as the true goddesses that we are. I mean, we carry the mystery of all life in our bodies. We bring forth life. There's nobody out there that didn't have a mother, you know. In case you haven't noticed, the mother happens to be a female. And, you know, when you talk about the right to life and everything, you know, the mother is the one who brings forward life. The mother is the one who nurtures life. Hopefully, if you have a good father and a good husband, they support that, what you're doing. But oftentimes, it just doesn't work out that way. And also with Maria Gumbadis, what she looked at very, very, very closely is the effect that the difference, rather, between a matriarchic society where women rule and a patriarchic society where men rule. So I really thought that was a very, very interesting book. And we will have all this information on www.womenspaces.com. So, and all shows are also archived on there. And another woman that I think is very important, and this was, she was born January 25th, 1896. Wow. And she made her transition in 1987. That was Helen Herfermann. She was a strong supporter of United Nations education, a bilingual education. She recognized that children who were interned in World War II needed health and family services. And she stood up for that. You know, when Germany was destroyed and all of many parts of Europe were destroyed, it was amazing that there were many women that stood up. And this woman really stood up to make sure not only that the people, the young people that were so impacted by war had health care and had some of the services they needed to survive, and then also to bring forward bilingual education. you know, sometimes, you know, people are say, oh, why do we have to have bilingual education? Well, in California, it's very important. That was part of the treaty when Mexico gave into the United States and California became part of the United States. That was part of the agreement that they would be able to have bilingual or Spanish. They would be able to keep their language. But this woman took it one step further. She wanted to make sure that there was bilingual education in the schools itself. And then one of my favorite, I talk about her every year when her birthday comes up because I just cannot believe her. And that is her name is that she was the first African American, a woman to fly a plane, and her name was Bessie Coleman. And when I found out about Bessie Coleman, which is so interesting, they just released a 25 cent, a quarter in her honor. In fact, I'm gonna order some. I found a place I can order them. They're actually, the quarter is $2 a piece, and they put them in a little package with all the history of Bessie Coleman. So let me tell you about her. Bessie Coleman was the first African American woman in the world to fly a plane and earn an international pilot's license. She found out that on January 3rd this year, like I said, they released the Bessie Coleman quarter, and it's actually beautiful. It really is absolutely beautiful. And Bessie Coleman was very influential of starting flight schools for women. Unfortunately, at the age of 34, she was in a horrible accident, and it ended her life. But she definitely left a legacy behind. In fact, she piloted so many planes and made so many trips and took so many risks. I mean, can you imagine that? Can you imagine getting on a plane at that time? I mean, she was born in Coleman was born in 1892 and made her transition in 1926. I mean, they didn't have the planes we have today. I mean, people really had risk. And it was so sad because when she had the accident, she literally fell out of the plane. And that's how the plane kind of did something and it flipped and she fell out. And that was the end of her life. But what a risk taker she was. And so I just remember her every year. You know, we always talk about Amelia Earhart, but this woman was even before Amelia Earhart. So a wonderful, wonderful taking risk like she took. So that there's a lot to think about. There really is. There's so many wonderful things that women do. I love going through our women, our history, because it really gives us some insight into what's going on and what women have accomplished. And I often thought, you know, when I was growing up, the only thing I thought I could be is either a teacher or a nurse, or of course I had to be a wife. You know, find myself a good husband that was going to support me. And things have really changed, and they've changed because of women like Bessie Coleman and like women like Helen Heffernan. I mean, these women made a big difference in a time where women were hardly allowed to speak. So a lot to think about, folks, and I hope we're all out there thinking, because there's a lot to look at and wonder about, that's for sure. Well, we're going to take a musical break right now. And then, like I said, I'm going to be going through and just doing my own personal analysis of the poster, Children Learn What They Live. And like I said, it is my hope that maybe folks are out there and listening and start having a little bit of a different perspective. You know, it's not that, you know, one is totally against law enforcement, but it doesn't have to be the first thing we think about. You know, there are many, many ways that we can work with these young people and get them to understand. And that's what they need. And they need some new examples. They need some new ideas put up in front of them. I mean, it's frightening to me when I see some of these movies that come out. I mean, some of the violence, it's mind-blowing. It is mind-blowing. I mean, what happened to, like, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers? Or those kind of fun movies, what I grew up with. Although, I don't know, you know, one way or another, you know, you can't stop progress with the technology, but you can certainly start thinking about the effect it's having on our young people. Because the young people are our future. You know, and we have to invest in them, and we can't just allow them to just run wild and just watch any violent thing they want. I mean, I see sometimes parents are sitting watching, you know, films that I wouldn't even allow my daughter to look at the time with a baby sitting on their lap. I mean, and you don't think that baby's being influenced? We're influenced by everything around us, and that's why it's really, we have to be really careful. So I have just chosen this one song. You know, this was an old Crosby, Stills and Nash song. Actually, it was written by Graham Nash, and he got a lot of acclimate for that, a lot of acclaim for it. In fact, I saw several films of Graham Nash with children actually singing the song. It's called Teach Your Children Well, and of course, this is Women's Spaces, so I found a woman that sings it, a country version, country western version that I really enjoy, by the name of Susan Kong. And I think it's the perfect song, because when we return, like I said, I'm going to comment on Children Live What They Learn, written in 1954 by Dorothy Law Minolti. She was a woman who understood the field of positive youth development before it was even invented. Just think, 70 years ago. And what she wrote still holds true today. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play Teach Your Children Well.
Because the past is just a goodbye. So teach your children well. Your father's hell is slowly gone by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they pick, the one told you you will cry. Just look at them and sigh. And know they love you. And you of tender years can know the fear before they can die. So teach your parents well. Their children's hell will slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they pick, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them told you you will cry. Just look at them and sigh. And know they love you. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you you will cry, just look at them and sigh.
Wow. You know, and know they love you. You know, children are so trusting and so loving of their parents. It's just amazing. And so forgiving. It's just amazing. I mean, I can't believe myself. I raised my daughter as a single parent, and then I became a grandmother and went, wow, I can't believe it. And now a great grandmother. And I think to myself, please, we got to start changing some of our ideas and change our path, particularly around children. Well, for you just joining us, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And for this portion, I'm going to go over the 1954 poster, Children Learn What They Live, by Dorothy Law Nolte. She was a woman who understood the field of positive youth development before it was even invented. I know, you know, when I was in school, one of the things they said on my report card, they said, Elaine should understand that children should be seen and not heard. Well, I don't know what that taught me, but I certainly didn't feel good about myself for most of my life. Well, what inspired to talk about this event was reading in our local paper that gang activity, racism, and violence were on the rise in schools. I could not believe that four young women attacked another young woman. I mean, what is going through our children's mind? I don't know. I really don't know. From all that I have read, it appears that the best way to start solving the problem is to put more police in schools. Although that may be part of the solution, it takes more than just putting police on campuses. It is my hope that in doing this review, it will inspire people and to look at adding more counselors, to have focus groups with youth. You know, one of the things that I learned with Youth Corps, Neighborhood Youth Corps, when I was going to school, one of the things I learned from young people is they are good problem solvers. You know, in fact, when I would come in and we would have our little groups, when I worked with them twice a week, most of them went to the continuation school. The first thing I would tell them was I would bring the problem I might be having with my own teenage daughter. And it was amazing some of the solutions that they would come up with. And then we would talk about some of the solutions that maybe they could talk about to how they can resolve some of their problems. And I, you know, this is an interesting story. Let me just tell you this one interesting story. I had a young boy. Well, I was getting my master's degree at San Francisco State, and we had to write papers, and there was really some real rigid requirements. And so I had to have these kids. They had to be working with me and cooperating so I could apply some of the things that I was learning on how to work with youth. And they were amazing. They were just amazing. But there was this one young boy that just used to drive me crazy. And I finally got a hold of him. And I says, you know something? Either you're going to stop acting out the way you're acting out, or I'm not going to be able to keep you in this class. I said, what can I do? What is the problem here? And he opened his mouth and showed me he had rotten teeth. And he said, Miss Pine, as I was Pine at the time before I changed back to my maiden name, he said, Miss Pine, I can't sleep at night. I said, oh, my God. Well, that was the time when President Johnson brought on Medicare, and you had dental, you had vision, you had everything you could imagine. And so I went, I got all the information, went over and saw his family. And next thing I knew, he had his teeth fixed, and he ended up graduating high school. A simple thing like that. You know, that's what a counselor's so good about. That's what a person, when they get to know these young people, they understand what some of the issues that they're working with. So I think it's very, very important that we start looking at how we work with our youth and how we judge them. You know, at one time, believe it or not, folks, young people didn't even sit down to dinner with their parents. It was that they were kind of over there in their own little table, so to speak. So things have changed, but we have to change them even more. We have to start looking at what does it take to develop a loving, caring human being. Because right now, when you look at what's going on in the schools, I mean, just in our own little communities here, and what's happening globally, I mean, it's mind-boggling. So we're gonna talk about these principles here. You know, that it's called, you know, Children Learn What They Live, and it was written by Dorothy Law Nolte. And when I first saw it, even though it was written in 54, the first time I saw it was in the 60s. And first it came out as a poster, then it came out with they had magnets, and then they had pins. You could wear a pin with all the different aspects of it. And it was amazing. And I remember putting that thing on my, magnet on my refrigerator and looking at it every day as I raised my daughter as a single parent. And when I look at her today and how she raised her children and looking at my great-grandchildren, I think it had a little bit of an impression. So let's go ahead. Let's start with the first thing. The first thing is, if children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. Now, that's a very interesting one. You know, oftentimes, you know, there's a thing called, I learned when I was a corporate sales manager, it was a book called 1 Minute Manager. And they used to say, before you tell somebody a negative thing, you tell them 3 good things about them. Because otherwise you kind of deplete them and then they get negative. They not only get negative with criticism, they learn to condemn. And in that condemning, maybe that's when they become racist, or maybe that's when they become violent, you know, because they think of the other, or, you know, they're trying to make themselves feel better because they get a lot of criticism. And so they're going to turn that on to someone else. So it's interesting to think about that. Now, if children live with hostility, they learn to fight. Study after study have demonstrated that if children grow up violently, say if they have violent parents or they're excessively punished, when they become parents, they do the same thing. So you have to start looking at that. If children live with hostility, they learn to fight. In other words, it's, you know, well, I mean, that's only natural. If you're hostile towards me, you know, I'm gonna want to, you know, kind of defend myself. So you're looking, thinking, I was thinking about these 4 young women who attacked this young girl. You know, what was going on inside of them? Maybe they lived with hostility. Maybe that's what they're taking out, that anger. You know, they kind of come together in groups and they take that anger out. I'm not giving it an excuse. I'm just giving it an idea of how to look at it before, you know, before we jump in so quickly and we're going to punish or we're going to put police in, that maybe that person needs a little bit more work. But if there's no counselor available, if there's no programs available, you know, there's some great programs out there that have been written over the years, you know, that I'm sure that the schools have experimented with, but they need more personnel to help that. If children live with ridicule, they learn to be shy. Well, I'll tell you something. I'll never forget when I was going to Los Angeles City College. Like I said, you know, I was one of these kids that was acting out, that really got in trouble a lot, you know, and really was kind of put down. You know, like I said in the report card, Elaine should understand children should be seen and not heard. And then they learn to be shy. Well, in order for me to graduate Los Angeles City College, I had to take a speech class. And guess what? I was so shy I could barely speak, and thank God for the teacher who helped me. If children live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. They feel guilty, you know, shame of your body, sex is bad, all those things, you know, and then all of a sudden maybe, you know, you take your clothes off or you do something with somebody and all of a sudden you just feel like you're just horrible. It's not fun, you know, it's not fun growing up because you're experimenting and you're kind of a free agent, if you know what I mean, because you just jump into things without thinking about it. If children live with encouragement, this is so important. They learn confidence. If children live with tolerance, they learn to be patient. In other words, tolerance. Go slower. Try it again. You know, I remember my daughter would come home sometime frustrated because she couldn't figure this math problem out. And, you know, she'd sit down with I had a friend of mine that was really a good math person. And he would help her go through step by step by step until she finally learned it. I mean, I think about me learning the computers. If it wasn't for Ken, I mean, I couldn't figure out what the word browser was for a year. I mean, but he was patient. He was tolerant with me. And he taught me patience. I'm more patient with myself. I'm more patient with others. If children live with praise, they learn to appreciate. If children live with acceptance, they learn to love. If children live with approval, they learn to like themselves. You know, that's why it's so important. You know, when they have these, I like to buy these for my great grandkids, all these stickers, like you're okay. You know, you're doing a good job. All these things help a child to like themselves, to accept themselves. Maybe those people that are acting out, maybe that's not happening in their lives. Maybe they need a counselor to talk to. maybe they need someone, a kind of a mentor. You know, I love these mentoring programs. I don't even know if they have as many as they used to have. They used to be able to get like the big brothers and big sisters. You could have an adult that works with you. And I think that's really, really important. If children live with honesty, they learn truthfulness. I mean, look at the television and Facebook and all this stuff, all the lies that are coming across. What can they trust anymore? And so you wonder why your children lie to you, because they live in a world of lies. So we have to really look at that. You know, if children live with honesty, they learn truthfulness. If children live with security, they learn to have faith in themselves and others. What kind of security is happening for children when you have countries that are blowing each other up? I mean, let's think about that. You know, you need security. I mean, I know I feel very secure in my house. I love when I get into my comfortable bed and I know nobody's going to shoot me down. How do you think they feel in war-torn countries, children? You know, how can they feel secure? How can they have faith in themselves or anybody else? I mean, just think about those things. And if children live with friendliness, they learn the world is a nice place in which to live. You know, friendliness, what does that mean? You know, maybe some people would say it's too of a grand way of looking, you know, the perfect. Children learn with praise, they learn to appreciate all these different things that we're talking about. But there's a lot to think about in this. And when you think about it, you need to take it one step further. How in my home am I supporting my children? How am I praising them? How am I accepting them? How am I being less judgmental? And it's hard because oftentimes, you know, I remember I was a working parent. You come home, you don't even want to deal with your kids. But you brought them into the world. You know, it's the same thing. We're fighting so hard for the fetus. These are the things that a child, when it's born, needs to understand and needs to be exposed to so they can be a better person, for not only for themselves, for other people. So there's a lot to think about here. And just to let you know that this will be on our website, www.womenspaces.com. We'll have this Children Learn What They Live. And also next week when we do the Women's Spaces Pledge, when you listen to it, think about what we're telling ourselves. Think about how important that is that we tell our children this, that their self-esteem depends on themselves. And in order for them to have any kind of self-esteem, you have to look at some of these principles that we brought forward. So there's a lot to think about, and I hope that if you have any questions for me or if you'd like to comment on this, please email me at elainebholtz@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Well, we are going to take another musical break, and then we're going to talk about the seven principles of Kwanzaa, and I'm going to go through them very, very quickly. And I found a wonderful song by the name of a woman by the name of Bunny Hull. And what's interesting about Bunny Hull is that the song came out of Happy, Happy Kwanzaa for the World. So this is called A World of Difference. In other words, how beautiful it is to be different by Bunny Hull. And when we come back, I will be talking about Kwanzaa and its seven principles. So let's go ahead and play that song, Ken.
From Mexico to England, China to Peru, from Germany to India, there are people like me and you. From Pakistan to Egypt, from Israel to Spain, we have different languages, we really all the same. One, we are one, we are one in a world of difference. One, we are one, we are one in a world of love. From Canada to Russia, to Afghanistan, from North to South Korea, oh, let us understand. From America to Cuba, Barbados to Congo, no matter where you come from, there's
Ethiopia, Guatemala to Thailand, from Kenya to Morocco, we are one race, human. From Chile to Jamaica, Australia to Iran, we share one sun, one life, one dream, for peace in every land. Oh, one, we are one, we are one, in a world of difference. One, we are one, we are one, in a world of love. Sing it with me now, everybody. One, we are one, we are one, in a world of difference. One, we are one, we are one, in a world of love.
Oh, wow. We are one. It's beautiful. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And we're going to go on, and we're going to talk about the seven principles of Kwanzaa and what it means. And why I'm doing this is because I was really, really impressed with what they were talking about, some of the youth that's acting out in our community. And I thought it's really important to talk about these principles. And a special shout-out to my African-American sisters and brothers for bringing this wonderful, wonderful holiday to my attention and for and these wonderful, wonderful principles. Well, what do the seven principles of Kwanzaa mean? Well, if you hadn't noticed yet, the number seven holds a lot of power and symbolism in celebrating this holiday. The word has seven letters, Kwanzaa. The celebration lasts 7 days, and the holiday focuses on seven main principles. And also, it is commemorated with a seven-branched candelabra. The middle candle is black. Three candles on the left are red, and three candles to the right are green. Each day, one of the candles lit in conjunction with one of the principles. So let's go to the first principle. The first principle, and I am not, you know, it's wonderful. If you go on my website, www.womenspaces.com, there's a wonderful, wonderful radio interview last January, January 2023 with Sabri Abulia, for pronouncing your name, Abulia, but I'll tell you something. She pronounces the words wonderful, but the first principle is unity. This principle emphasizes the importance of unity in all areas, including family, community, nation, and race. You know, and you light the center black candle in dedication to, you know, the first day. The second principle is self-determination. It focuses on building your identity as a person and a community, both historically and the present day, by asking the question, who am I? How many people ask that question? That's a difficult, who am I? I mean, I know I'm a human being. In fact, what I say is the first thing, I'm a human being first, and a woman second, and the rest you can, whatever label you want to put on me, that's fine. But I think that's very, very important, self-determination. And that's what I love about the Women's Spaces Pledge. That's the whole idea about it, is self-determination. Your self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of you. It's your own relationship with yourself and how you move forward in your life. The third one is collective. I love this one. Collective work and responsibility. It focuses on the collective responsibility for both achievements and setbacks in the community. This principle reminds us to celebrate with each other, and that building each other up is the best way to truly solve a problem. To build each other up is the best way to solve a problem. I mean, that just gives me the chills when I think about it. The fourth, cooperative economics. Now, this is a really interesting one. Focuses on a concerted effort to pool resources, to come together as neighborhoods, and also to have a communal sense of profit, not an individual. Say, oh, I'm going to make all the money I can. The heck with you. No, it's a communal sense. It's a feeling of community that we each want each one to have. You know, it's a kind of like love your neighbor as yourself, you know, in that kind of way. The next, the fifth one, and I really like this one, is purpose. 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 We all need a purpose in life. It encourages you to think outward and look at goals that can benefit the larger community. I guess you're getting the hint now that this is very community, people-oriented. Very important. What benefits a larger community? You know, I cannot stand when I hear our politicians say, oh, if you get Social Security, it's an entitlement. Or if you need a little help with food stamps, it's entitlement. You know, no, it's a way of sharing and bringing the community, giving the community what it needs. But the purpose is, your own purpose is to help that community grow. It's not just self-centered act that me, 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 my, mine. No, it's a community together, coming together with a purpose. And I think the purpose is to survive. You know, we need each other to survive. We cannot survive without each other. I mean, we really cannot. The sixth one is creativity. This is the principle of creativity. This refers to each individual's creativity, but the focus is on improving and bringing beauty to your community through that creativity, whether it's art, dance, music, or literature. That is amazing when you think about it. Creativity is so important. And what do they cut in schools? They cut art classes, music classes, you know, any kind of, you know, learning how to do, you know, to think creatively. All these things are put aside, like they're not important. But creativity is very important to be able to express ourselves through art, through music, through movement. It's really thrilling when you think about it. And then the last one, faith. Faith. Faith reminds us that Kwanzaa is a non-religious celebration. But faith here refers to the family and community traditions as a spiritual center. It is the belief in community leaders, teachers, and loved ones. Past and present. Faith. Faith is so important. Faith, to trust, to have faith is so important. And to be able to trust other people. Well, that's the seven principles of Kwanzaa. And I have to say that they really are inspiring to me. Well, what we're going to do now, I've covered a lot of stuff, and we're gonna do the last few minutes of the show. We're gonna play the Galaxy song, Ken.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and play it. And the reason I want to play it, even though it's a wonderful, wonderful song, and it's sang by a man by the name of Clint Black, and I'll tell you, nobody can sing it better than him. And I think it's important that we remember, with all the information that we got, that we're living in a universe, we're living in a great mystery, and if we make up our minds, we can do anything possible. Let's go ahead, Ken.
Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving, revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day in an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick. But out by us, it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go around. around every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. Keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you feel very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space. 'Cause I'm afraid that we've been cheated here on Earth.
Oh, I love that song. Well, folks, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And remember to go on the website, www.womenspaces.com. You'll see the Kwanzaa Seven Principles, and you will also see Children Learn What They Live. And it's an amazing, amazing, amazing event to have done this show. I want to thank you so much for listening. And listen, pay attention. Call your board of supervisors. Call your city councils. Tell them that you want to see more counselors in schools. You want to see more programs. You want to see more jobs for young people. There's so many things we can do. But the most important thing is, remember, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that.
She can wait.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, January 22nd, 2024.